Wednesday, August 10th, 2016, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, I know that there are a ton of sports shows out there that you can listen to. So thank you for hanging out with us every single week here on the Daily Dose. You know, we do release a new show every single Wednesday. And, you know, I would like to encourage you to feel free to let a friend or a coworker or, you know, a family member, someone know that they can download the Daily Dose and they can enjoy it as well. Number of places they can get it. Of course, they can go to iTunes. They can go to Stitcher. They can go to somewhere like Google Play. They can go over to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. We are starting to release some college football previews that you may want to check out. That college football season is coming very quickly. You can head over there and check out the podcast as well. Or you can head over to rogueintel.com, check out the Rogue Intel Podcast Network and a number of the great podcasts that they have over there. You know, it's kind of been that dry season. It's kind of that dry season right now where there hasn't been a whole lot of talk to talk about. And we've discussed a few different things. You know, last week, of course, we had Lindsay Mabel on. Lindsay Mabel, the gymnast out of the University of Minnesota. Lindsay did a phenomenal job on the show. We loved having her on. She did a great job. Now, we're starting to get a couple of stories come out. We're starting to, you know, it's starting to get a little more interesting. You know, we saw a few things this week. So, of course, the Olympics are going now. Are you watching the Olympics? Are you enjoying the Olympics? The Olympics are kind of funny. We have sports. Like the other day, I'm sitting there and I'm watching a beach volleyball match. Not the women's. Don't put me in that category. Just yet. I was watching the men, but I'm watching like Qatar versus, I don't know, Spain. I have no interest in this sports whatsoever, but it's Seinfeld-esque. Why are you watching it? Because it's on. I mean, the Olympics are on and I'm watching them. I have a couple of questions about a few Olympic things, and we'll get to the bulk of our show here in a few minutes, but I do have a couple of questions about some of the Olympic things. Have you noticed at the swimming competitions that they have lifeguards over on the side? Have you seen the lifeguard over on the side of the swimming competition in the Olympics? There's a lifeguard sitting over there, and like he doesn't have a lot to do. Like, I'm going to be honest with you, he's bored most of the time. Like, these are the best swimmers on the planet. What do you need the lifeguard for? I mean, does he really, is he telling him not to run? What is it that he's doing over there? Look next time you're watching swim. There is a lifeguard over on the side. He's got his little buoy in his whistle. I don't have any idea what he's doing. What else did we have come out this week in the world of sports? The NFL. First NFL preseason game was going to go this past Sunday. Of course, the Hall of Fame game was going to take place. I believe it was the Indianapolis Colts and the Green Bay Packers. And instead, they canceled the game because apparently it looks like they were trying to paint the center of the field and they used the wrong paint. Hey, who hasn't done that? Who hasn't done that? They used the wrong paint. But here was the problem. They say that the paint basically turned the grass into cement, so the grass was not playable on. Like, it was a player safety issue. I understand that. I'm all about player safety. We've talked about that on the show before. Player safety is a very important thing. I would like to know what the paint was, because I would love to put like a full court basketball court in my backyard, but I've got all that tiresome grass back there. Like, if they could let me know what they used, that I could just go spray my grass real quick and make it like cement. That would be kind of nice. What else did we see? We saw baseball this week, of course. Alex Rodriguez retired from the Yankees, sort of. Like, the Yankees were like, hey, Alex, we're thinking maybe you'd retire. He's like, nah, I think I got a couple more years of me. Yeah, I don't think you heard me. I was thinking maybe you'd retire. How do you feel about retiring? We're thinking, like, retirement would be a good fit for you. So we're starting to get a couple of things going in the world of sports, and it's just going to get better. We're just going to get closer. As we get into football season, we get into some of those things that are a little more interesting. But today on the show, we are going to continue with our look at the top players in the NFL for each franchise. Who is the best player on each NFL franchise. You might have heard Mike from Castle Rock join me, and we discussed the best players from each franchise in the NFC. Now today, we will continue on with the best player on each team in the AFC. Mike from Castle Rock has joined me again. Mike, thank you for being here. I really do appreciate you being here.
I love doing this with you.
Always fun to just go back, talk some history, look back at some of the best players on each team. And some of these players and franchises, you look at them and you're like, oh, here's a team that is loaded. They've got a ton of talent. And sometimes it's not quite as easy. Sometimes you look at them and you say, there's too many to choose from. And then there's other franchises that you're just like, yeah, you don't really have any good players in your entire history. And we've kind of seen all of those things in the NFC. Now we switch our attention to the AFC, and we are going to take a look at the top players for each franchise in the AFC. Let's kick it off right off the bat with the Baltimore Ravens. You know, the Baltimore Ravens were established in 1996 because they used to be the Cleveland Browns, and Art Modell decided he would just uproot his franchise and move them to Baltimore and become the Ravens. It wasn't even that they moved and stayed the Browns. They moved and completely changed everything. We're now the Ravens, completely switched it all. As a result, though, they don't have this huge long history. The Ravens have only really been in existence since 96 because we know that the Browns came back into play, and so they don't have this huge long history. When you look at the Baltimore Ravens, and they have had some success, they have won a couple of Super Bowls, but who are the guys that stand out as the top players in Baltimore history?
What you immediately think of when you think of the Baltimore Ravens is defense.
Absolutely.
It's what got them to the Super Bowl. It's funny, they ended up blowing out the Giants, so it didn't even look like a defensive game, but it's all about the defense. Can't stand him as a commentator, but Ray Lewis is the best player in Baltimore Ravens history.
Yeah, no question about it. And the things that he did, the amount of tackles that he racked up over 1,500 tackles in his career, 41 and a half sacks, went to 13 Pro Bowls, hit a couple of murders. I mean, wait, oops, was I supposed to? Sorry. Yeah, Ray Lewis did it all, I guess is what we're trying to say. Ray Lewis did it all, had his little nice little pregame dance. But yeah, Ray Lewis, to me, best player in Baltimore Ravens history. I guess there's a couple guys I'll throw out. Ed Reed.
Absolutely. He was an easy second choice for me.
Yeah, so productive back there at the safety and always so dangerous, not just to make the interception or to knock the play. He could take the ball back to the other end zone was the most dangerous part about Ed Reed, and we know that all too well here in Denver.
A third choice for me, I actually put Jonathan Ogden.
Yep, Jonathan Ogden, very, very solid. They had a couple of decent runners up there in Baltimore and seemed like they could at least piece together enough of a passing game, and Jonathan Ogden was part of that. I remember, was it Jamal Lewis had some pretty good seasons up there, but they had some decent runners up there. Is he elite? I don't know if he's elite. Do we put Joe Flacco anywhere on this list? He won a Super Bowl. Yes, he looks like Bert from Sesame Street, but he won a Super Bowl.
The unibrow. Time will tell.
Yeah.
Right now, it's funny. It was all the talk about, is he elite? I won a Super Bowl. And then they signed him to that mega contract, and I think they're regretting it now.
Yeah, they have to be, because we're seeing kind of this pattern play out in the NFL. You either have a great quarterback that you pay, and then you surround him with as much talent as you can afford, or you don't have a great quarterback. You surround an average quarterback with a ton of talent and hope that he can win. Right now, they're kind of stuck in no man's land because Joe Flacco is being paid like an elite quarterback and he's not performing like an elite quarterback.
Yeah, you know, time will tell again. Still have hopefully several years left for the Ravens fans there, but I wouldn't put him in the top three or four right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I think Ray Lewis, anybody else that even made your list? Or I had four guys on my list, and I think we named all four of them.
No, I didn't go further than that.
Okay, let's move on to another team. Let's move on to a team that started in the AFL back in 1960. They were pretty good back in the AFL, and they had some really, really good years in the NFL. The problem for the Buffalo Bills is that they went 0-4 in the Super Bowls. Just brutal. I know we have some Buffalo Bill fans that do listen to the Daily Dose. Buffalo Bills fans, sorry. You had some really, really good teams. They did have some very, very good individuals, talent-wise, though. Who makes your list for the Buffalo Bills?
You know, it's funny. You get a lot of these teams that had a lot of success, and you mentioned their triplets. The Cowboys definitely had that.
Yep.
You know, the Rams had that as well. Buffalo had it too.
Yeah, they did.
Jim Kelly.
Yeah.
Thurman Thomas. you know, maybe Andre Reed.
Sure.
But to me, it was a pretty easy pick. It's Bruce Smith.
Yeah, Bruce Smith was absolutely incredible. The job he did, just could move around to different sides of the line, could dominate a game from the defensive end spot. Great pass rusher. Probably a little bit underrated against the run, but Bruce Smith went to 11 Pro Bowls. He had 171 sacks. Bruce Smith was a phenomenal player, and I know nobody wants to hear it. Don't we got to throw in O.J. Simpson somewhere on the list?
I've got him in parentheses down at the bottom here, but yes, absolutely.
Hey, but just a slasher, I mean, just a guy that could just carve up defenses or women or something. O.J. Simpson, the interesting part about O.J. Simpson, he had a couple of very, very good years yardage-wise, but I think if you were to really look at O.J. Simpson's career, you'd probably say, I don't know if I'd use the word bust, but he was a little bit of a bust. When he came out of USC, everyone looked at O.J. Simpson. This is a guy that can't miss. This is a guy that's going to take whatever franchise he goes to and make them a contender. Yeah, he never really did that. He did a lot of things commercially. He did a lot of things where his name was out there, but it wasn't like he ever transformed the Bills into winners.
He did get to 2,000 yards in 14
games.
Yeah, he
did. And I think that's the biggest thing that offsets all the things that maybe he didn't accomplish wins and losses wise, was the fact that he put up some huge numbers rushing wise. They just didn't win that often. But I suppose he has to be put in there somewhere. But yeah, I've got Bruce Smith as my top player for the Buffalo Bills in their history. I don't know if there's anyone else even in there that we want to talk about. Joe Cribbs, Joe Ferguson. All right, we're moving on from the Buffalo Bills. We're going on to the Cincinnati Bengals. Cincinnati Bengals, founded back in 1966 as part of the AFL. They have been to two Super Bowls, but this Cincinnati Bengals are one of those teams that just seem like they can never get out of their own way. It seems like they always find ways to screw things up. And I'm going to be honest, when I went through and picked the top player in their history, that's exactly what I found. It's kind of bizarre who I came up with. So who's your pick for top Cincinnati Bengal in history?
I would just have to laugh if we have the same player.
We're going to have the same player.
Anthony Munoz.
Anthony Munoz. Yeah, it's not even close. He went to 11 Pro Bowls. What do you want from him? I mean, you've got to go with Anthony Munoz. But the fact that we have a Bengals best player ever, and it's an offensive lineman, yeah, it kind of sums up who the Bengals are. And if you're a Bengals fan, I'm not trying to dog on you, but they just haven't had that many guys. There are a couple guys that I will at least give mention to, but I think Munoz is hands down the favorite. One guy that I think, I don't know that he ever had enough of a surrounding cast and enough talent around him, but Kenny Anderson was really, really good. And, you know, he started his career playing for Bill Walsh. Had he continued under Bill Walsh, Bill Walsh claims that he was one of the better quarterbacks he ever coached. You could make a case Ken Anderson might have been Joe Montana.
That might be a little bit of a stretch, well, but
I'm taking it from Bill Walsh.
You know, it's this is just getting ridiculous. Ken Anderson was my second choice.
Yeah.
Honorable mention, the 2000 second-ranked Broncos defense.
Oh, yeah. That gave Corey Dillon a heyday.
Made me mention Corey Dillon.
Sure.
278 yards.
Oh, that was a long day.
Bengals were 0-6 going into that game.
Oh, I didn't remember that part of it.
The Broncos were the second-ranked defense in all of the NFL.
And he carved them up. I remember that. You know, Corey Dillon was a pretty solid runner and had some good years in Cincinnati, had some good years even with the Patriots up in New England. Yeah.
Best dancer?
Best dancer.
Icky Woods.
Icky Woods, without question. You know the weird thing about Icky Woods? If you look at Icky Woods, he had like a 2, maybe 3-year window. And they were pretty good years, but that was it. But no, he had some really, really solid years. I'm going to throw a guy out there. He was with the Bengals, didn't have a ton of talent around him. Boomer Esiason was kind of good wherever he went. He won a little bit with the Bengals. He won a little bit with the Jets. He won a little bit everywhere he went. No, he wasn't one of the greats all time, but Boomer Esiason was a pretty tough, scrappy quarterback.
Yeah, same thing. Just no talent around him, nothing to do it with.
No, and that's the same thing. When I look at Ken Anderson and I look at Boomer Esiason, like, can you name a wide receiver or a running back that they played with? I mean, you've got, like, Pete Johnson and Chris Collinsworth, you know, guys like that, that just James Brooks, you know, there just weren't that many talented guys around them. I guess I have to give a little bit of a nod to Chad Johnson. He had some productive years in Cincinnati. He had the River Dance, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Sure.
But other than that, Cincinnati has
He led the team in personal fouls for celebrating in the end zone, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think A.J. Green's going to get there.
He's got a chance. He's got a chance. Anybody else that you want to mention for Cincinnati?
No.
No. I'm done with Cincinnati. All right. Moving on from the Cincinnati Bengals to another team that hasn't had a ton of success. The Cleveland Browns, founded back in 1945. Hey, they won four NFL championships. Of course, they were all pre-Super Bowl. And in fact, the Cleveland Browns have actually never been to a Super Bowl. One of just four teams to never play in a Super Bowl. Cleveland Browns, but they have had some good players. They have had some talented players. They've at least had two that I can name. All right, who makes your list for the Cleveland Browns?
I probably have the same two, yeah, but number one is obvious as anything. Jim Brown.
Yeah, Jim Brown, without question. You know, Jim Brown played for 9 seasons. He went to 9 Pro Bowls. I was told there wouldn't be math when I started the Daily Dose, but I'm trying to figure out that math, and it's pretty solid. He was named the NFL MVP 3 different times, and when he retired, after just 9 seasons, he led the league all-time in rushing with over 12,000 yards, a record that held, you know, until the mid-80s. He had 106 touchdowns, so Jim Brown has got to be the guy, but I do have to throw Otto Graham in there. Otto Graham had some phenomenal years as quarterback. And, you know, you look at his record, and I know they were playing back against George Washington and those guys. But as a starter, he was 57-13. Otto Graham had some phenomenal years in Cleveland.
Yeah, that he was also my second, and I think that just shows you that it's a pretty obvious choice. And unfortunately, a fairly thin field to choose from. You know, you can throw in an Ozzie Newsome.
Yeah. Ozzie was good.
Clay Matthews Jr., it's not a big field for the Browns.
No. Bernie Kosar? We getting Bernie Kosar? How about Lou Groza? Lou Groza had some solid years as a straight-on kicker, I guess. Lou, and I think he played some like defensive tackle. Like that was back in the day. You were like the number 99, and you played tackle. You made a few sacks, and then you kicked the extra point to seal the victory. Yeah, Lou Groza, I guess, gets on there. But yeah, the Browns just kind of been an effort and futility the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years. You know, the guy to me that stands out a little bit with Cleveland Browns, that he'll never get the credit. Very, very good player. And of course, we remember him from the fumble. But Ernest Biner was a pretty good player.
He absolutely was. He was the heart and soul of that team when they were knocking on the door and John Elway shut it a couple years. But yeah, he is definitely not going to hold a candle to Jim Brown, but one of their best running backs.
Yeah, yeah. No, Cleveland just didn't have. Remember little Eric Metcalf? He was fun to watch in Cleveland, but yeah, Jim Brown, hands down, not even close. Speaking of those Denver Broncos, we've got to get to at least my hometown, Denver Broncos, Mike's hometown, Denver Broncos. I know not all of our listeners are from Denver, but the Denver Broncos, founded back in 1960, you know, they were the only AFL team to never have a winning season. All the other teams at least had winning seasons. A number of AFL teams, you know, contended, had championships. The Denver Broncos were horrible. And then a few things changed. I think two of the guys that changed those things are going to be on our list. The Broncos have now been to 8 Super Bowls. They have won 3 of them. All right, who's the guy at the top of the list? I think we probably both have the same guy at the top of our list, right?
I'm sure we do, and he's making a name for himself as the GM. It's got to be the Duke, John Elway.
I was going to say Tim Tebow. It's not Tim Tebow. Okay. Yes, John Elway. John Elway, 148-82 as a starter, went to 9 Pro Bowls, named the MVP, won 2 Super Bowls. Yeah, I mean, just phenomenal. Took a team, this franchise, to 5 Super Bowls. And as impressive as it is that he took them to 5, like those 80s teams, name some other, we know them, but you couldn't name any other players on those teams.
He single-handedly got those teams through the AFC to run into the wall known as the AFC back then.
Yeah.
Those teams had no business in the Super Bowl for
John
Elway.
No, they really didn't. They really didn't. I mean, he didn't have anybody around him. He didn't have any players around him. His best running back was Sammy Winder. His best wide receiver was probably Vance Johnson, I mean, it's incredible that he carried that team the way that he did. And, you know, I have to give at least a little bit of credit to a coach, as much as I struggled with him. But Dan Reeves, he knew he didn't have the talent to compete with some of these teams, but he would keep it close, and then let John Elway go win it in the end. As much as they didn't like each other, they were pretty good together.
It was Sammy Winder left, yep. Sammy Winder right, John get the first down.
Exactly. And that's what they did. And they did it for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years where they were at the top of the AFC. John Elway got to be the guy. But I'm going to throw in a 1A on this list. Because if not for Floyd Little, John Elway never exists. You know, a lot of people don't realize it, but the Denver Broncos took a number of draft picks that you might have heard of. You know, guys like Dick Butkus, you know, guys like Merlin Olsen, some phenomenal, but nobody would come and play with Denver. They were like, why on earth would we go to this expansion AFL horrible team? There's nowhere we're going to go. Well, when they drafted Floyd Little, Little was a little bit naive. And he was just like, well, they drafted me. I guess that's where I go. So he actually showed up in Denver. The franchise was actually looking at possibly moving to Atlanta, possibly selling and getting out of here because they couldn't make any money. When they got Floyd Little, it completely flipped the franchise. They started making money. They started selling out. They started actually going door to door and selling bonds to keep the stadium and expand the stadium. He might be the most important player in history, just probably not the best player in history.
Important, absolutely, keeping the franchise here. A lot of people don't realize that story. The man most responsible for the first Super Bowl victory, Terrell Davis.
Sure. Yeah, no question about it. TD came in here and completely gave a different look to a Denver team that you'd always thought of as, hey, John Elway's got to do it all. All of a sudden, he had help. All of a sudden, he had a guy behind him that was really, really good. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Emmitt Smith and how he didn't always get credit because he had so much talent around him. I feel a lot of ways Terrell Davis was the same way. And there were a couple seasons that they plugged a different guy in and they had some success, but no one had the success like Terrell Davis did. He produced at such a high level. Won an MVP, won a Super Bowl MVP, 2,000 yards in a season. No, Terrell Davis has to at least get a mention on the list.
You also have to throw in Shannon Sharp.
Yep, I've got Shannon Sharp on there, and a guy that, I mean, here's a guy who was undrafted. They didn't know if he was a wide receiver. They didn't know if he was a tight end. And finally, Dan Reeves just said, how about we just let the defense try to figure out what in the world he is, because you can't cover him with a corner. He's too strong. And you can't cover him with a linebacker. He'll run past him. Shannon Sharp really changed the tight end position in a little bit in the modern era. Very, very good player here with the Denver Broncos. And I got to at least throw Peyton Manning in there just because the run that we've had just recently, I know it was just 4 years, the numbers he racked up and the winning percentage he put up, Peyton Manning had a golden era in the city of Denver.
Oh, he absolutely did. His best year ended poorly, obviously, right, against Seattle there. But going back to old school days here, it was Super Tecmo Bowl.
It was. No, it really was. To put up the kind of stats he was having in 2013, Peyton Manning was just, it was freakish. The number of touchdowns he had that year. It was a season, and I remember I was writing even, and I remember writing an article that season saying, enjoy this, because like Michael Jordan, like someone like, I don't know, a Babe Ruth or a John Elway or whoever you want to compare, it is going to be fleeting. It is going to be gone. But Peyton Manning had a year like I don't know if we'll ever see again.
Well, he got a pretty good head start with the opener against Baltimore.
Was that six touchdowns in the night?
Six or seven.
He
tied the all-time record. And the amazing thing to me about Peyton Manning was in the press conference, he didn't go Google things. The press conference, he immediately named the other three or four players that he tied the all-time record for. And we're talking about back in the 60s and people that most people haven't heard of.
No, Peyton Manning was a student of the game and knew the history of the game. And obviously, you know, with his dad and that kind of thing, he knew so much going back. Yeah, he knew all those guys. He knew the history and who had done it before him. Peyton Manning, just a freak athlete and had a brain like a computer. I think I might have told you this story, that when he came to Denver, he actually called back to the University of Tennessee and said, hey, there's a play that I'm searching for. We ran it once. It was in like the second quarter, my sophomore year when we played Ole Miss. Can you just go look? It's second quarter. It was like a draw play to the right side, and the film guy went back and found it. They had ran it one time, but Peyton was like, yeah, that would be perfect for us here in Denver. Just had a computer for a brain.
Absolutely. Wasn't the most physically talented, especially post-neck surgery, but
right.
Just amazing how he could command the game with his brain. Switch sides here. Defense.
Oh,
Bailey.
So many good ones. Champ Bailey has Atwater. To be on the list. Steve Atwater had some.
Tom Jackson, Randy Gradishar.
Out. Randy Gradishar is a guy that doesn't get nearly the credit that he deserves here with the Denver
Broncos. Not even close. Not even close.
Not even in his own city. I don't think he gets the credit here in Denver. I know nationally no one under it. But that is a guy that if you kept the stats that you keep today, his tackles numbers are right there with Ray Lewis. It is that close. But of course, you know, tackles. And he was doing it in 14 games, don't forget. But Randy Gradishar is a guy that doesn't get nearly the respect that he deserves. Just, he wouldn't do well at a combine. He wouldn't do well. Like in today's game, he'd be like, well, he didn't show very well. No, he just knew how to play football.
Yep.
There's something to be said for that. Yeah, and then on the defensive side, you know, guys like Reuben Carter, guys like even a Barney Chavis or someone like that.
Rulon Jones, Carl Mecklenburg.
Yeah, just didn't get the credit that a lot of them deserved. And some of them were playing on bad teams. Some of them were playing opposite, you know, guys like John Elway or something, so they didn't get the credit. But John Elway, clearly the guy for the Denver Broncos. All right, let's move on to a team that has not had the success of the Denver Broncos. We are moving on to a team that just took the Denver Broncos quarterback because, yeah, he wanted to go where all the great quarterbacks end up or not. All right, let's go to the Houston Texans. You know, the Houston Texans first played in 2002 as an expansion team after the Oilers moved out of Houston to Tennessee. They've never been to a Super Bowl, one of just four teams that have never been to a Super Bowl. Not a lot of history with the Texans franchise. There's some history in Houston, just not with the Texans. Kind of tough to come up with too many players from the Houston Texans, but who did you have as their best player in history?
Well, like you said, there's not a lot of deep history there, but I got to go with Andre Johnson.
Yeah, yeah. Andre Johnson put up some huge years with, I don't even know, David Carr throwing him the ball. I mean, he had over 13,000 yards and went to five Pro Bowls. He had 64 touchdowns. It's hard to come up with another player that even played with him. Andre Johnson's got to be the guy for me with the Houston Texans. They don't have it too much in their history, though.
No, you know, if he could stay healthy, you could certainly make an argument for Arian Foster. Undrafted, just blew up on the scene with the Texans.
Yeah, Arian Foster. And, you know, he just recently signed with the Miami Dolphins. I watched him just a little bit before he went down with the injury last year, and I thought, yeah, that's a guy that shouldn't be playing football anymore, but we'll see if he has anything left. Wouldn't that just be perfect for the Miami Dolphins to sign a guy that doesn't have anything left? And I'll give you the guy that should end up being the best player in Houston Texans history, and that, of course, is defensive standout J.J. Watt. Watt is a guy that, I mean, he's already racking up accolades. He's already racking up Pro Bowls and All Pros. The thing for J.J. Watt, I guess, to me, is he's got to bring the team with him, and they've got to win a couple of games so he gets you know, something where we can talk about him as an all-time guy. They're not winning anything.
I love watching this guy play. 100% effort all the time. Always going for the ball.
Yeah.
It leads the league in batted balls almost every year. It's unbelievable. If he can't get to the ball, you're not going to throw it over him.
Right. He, you know, it's funny because last year in the playoff game, they are at home against Kansas City. And I think we had even talked. And, of course, Brian Hoyer was the starter. He was horrible. Threw like five interceptions. They put J.J. Watt in on a goal line play. And it just kind of struck me that for probably the biggest play of the game to that point for the Houston Texans, they still wanted the ball in J.J. Watt's hand. He's a defensive end. They played him at what, a quarterback, I think? It's just bizarre. So, I don't know. We'll see what the Houston Texans can do going forward. But thus far in their short history, they haven't done much. All right, let's go to a team that does have a rich history. The Indianapolis Colts, founded back in 1953, back in Baltimore, they had three pre-Super Bowl championships. They are 2-1 in Super Bowls. For me, as easy as this kind of sounds, the Colts pick for top player in their franchise was a little bit tough.
I had two players immediately come to mind. I'm sure we're thinking about the same players. Ended up going with Peyton Manning.
Yeah, and I did too, because the numbers he was putting up were freakish. He was 141-67 as a starter. He had 399 touchdowns just with the Colts. But of course, the other guy we can put on there absolutely changed the league. They didn't have two-minute offenses. They didn't have timing patterns. They didn't have the, until Johnny Unitas came along, and Johnny Unitas came in and completely changed passing and offense and all those things that we think of as just, well, they're just commonplace. Yeah, they weren't until Johnny U came along.
Well, it's kind of funny. The Colts have had two quarterbacks that single-handedly have changed the way the quarterback position works.
Yep, so fortunate. And I, you know, we kind of look at it here in Denver as, you know, we got Elway and we got Peyton just for a brief window, but same thing back there with the Colts. I mean, having Manning and having Unitas before that, Unitas was doing just some incredible things, just way ahead of his time in the things that he did. Of course, you think back to the game that they end up losing and one of the biggest games in NFL history, where they lose Super Bowl III to the New York Jets. If Johnny Unitas starts that game, the history might be completely different, because I don't think they lose to the New York Jets. They started Urban Meyer, and I think they probably win if Johnny Unitas is the starter in that game. Phenomenal player. I guess, I don't know, Gino Marchetti, Marvin Harrison, anybody else that would go in on that?
I had Marvin Harrison up there. You know, you could say he's a product of Peyton Manning, but he really was a talent.
Sure, sure. And I guess I would do the same thing with someone like Reggie Wayne or anything like that. But yeah, I don't know if I'm going to put Burt Jones or any of those guys on my list. But the top two quarterbacks, I mean, you could be talking about the top two quarterbacks in NFL history, and they both played for the same team.
And now they've got the most sure thing.
Yes.
Supposedly, coming out of college. So we'll see how it ends up. See how he comes back from his injury.
Yeah, Andrew Luck hasn't looked like a sure thing as of late, has he?
Not yet. He was impressive his rookie year.
Yeah.
He took too many chances. He still need to build a little bit of a better team around him. But
sure,
if he turns out as good as they expected him to be, that's three incredible quarterbacks for one franchise.
Here's my struggle with Andrew Luck, aside from the fact that he looks like a complete goob. But my biggest problem with Andrew Luck, he takes too many hits. You can't get hit that many times. And as a young guy, sometimes I look at him and say, you either have that innate ability to avoid that hit like a Russell Wilson, or else you kind of don't, because he has to learn to avoid those hits. We saw the hit he took last year when the Denver Broncos played him and ruptured his spleen for him or whatever it was. Dude, you can't take those hits. You're the guy. You have to get down. You have to avoid that.
He won the game but lost the season at the same time.
Yes, and it was a game that was like week 7 or 8. I've got news for you. Those games don't matter nearly as much. You kind of got to be there at the end. All right. We are halfway through our list of the AFC teams and the top players in the AFC in franchise history. We will be right back to finish up the AFC.
You like beer?
Beer.
You like rock and roll?
I'm allergic to penicillin.
Do you like drunk Australians?
Beer.
Do you like interviews with bands exploring facets of entertainers' lives best left to the imagination and possibly not presented on a radio show?
I don't know where this is going.
Jump on rogueintel.com/remedial.
What's up, guys? Be sure to check out Now That I'm Older on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. Me and Kenny sit down and talk about how getting older sucks, but can be awesome at the exact same time. We also look at pop culture, review a few movies, share some personal stories, and just basically poke fun at the world around us. Be sure to check out Now That I'm Older on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network.
I say, boy, every time I gotta go get new boxing gloves for that daggone chicken hawk, I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon, and I get him the bestest boxing gloves that Amazon can buy. Look at that, he's hitting that dog. That is the dumbest dog I've ever seen.
All right, we continue our look at the top players from each NFL team. We are on the AFC, of course. We just finished the Indianapolis Colts. Now we move on to a much less historied team in the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars were an expansion team in 1995. They've made it to the playoffs 6 times. I guess that's about it. Again, one of just 4 teams that have never been to a Super Bowl. Not a whole lot to talk about with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike, who do you have? Best Jaguar ever.
For me, it was kind of a coin toss. Painful Bronco memories in the AFC playoffs with Mark Brunell scrambling like a madman before he injured his knee. He was Michael Vick-esque with his escapability and then being able to throw on the run. Yeah, MJD had some good times there too.
Yeah, he did. Maurice Jones-Drew, very, very good seasons there. I went a different route. This is one we actually don't have the same. I actually have Jimmy Smith. Jimmy Smith was a guy, I think he was cut by the Cowboys. He went down to Jacksonville, or at least maybe was declared as part of that expansion draft thing. Had 862 receptions, went to the Pro Bowl 5 times. I don't know. Not a whole lot to choose from. I'm going to give you one guy that might have to be on our list, though. Hometown guy, Fairview guy.
Owns Tony, about 800 McDonald's
yes,
in the metro area.
He owns all the McDonald's in the metro area. Tony Baselli was a very, very good player down with Jacksonville. And, of course, he played with that Burnell squad with Jimmy Smith and that group. Yeah.
The only thing I remembered about that game is not being able to catch Burnell and then Big Fat Perry not getting off the field and causing the first down and continuing the drive.
Oh, it was a brutal, brutal loss. Jacksonville, the loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars still ranks as one of the all-time losses in Denver Broncos history. And Jimmy Smith, Mark Burnell, Tony Baselli, those were all guys that were a part of that. All right, moving on from Jacksonville because they don't have much to talk about. We get to a team that did have a lot to talk about. Well, sort of. They had some very, very good players. Founded back in 1960, they were the Dallas Texans. But in 1963, they relocated to Kansas City and became the Kansas City Chiefs. They had 3 AFL championships. They are 1-1 in Super Bowls. They haven't been in a Super Bowl, I think, since George Washington played in a Super Bowl. It's been a while for the Kansas City Chiefs. They seem to have a little bit of a resurgence right now. We'll see what they end up doing with it. But when you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, who is the best player in Chiefs history?
This one was pretty obvious for me. I got to go with Derek Thomas.
Derek Thomas. Okay, we disagree on one, but I understand the pick of Derek Thomas. Derek Thomas put up some huge numbers, a little bit in that Lawrence Taylor mold where you just had to know where he was on every single play. The interesting thing about Derek Thomas, though, what was he, 33 when we lost him? We don't know what he still had coming. He may have still had some very, very productive years, and he had some huge years as it was. So Derek Thomas definitely could be on that list. I went a different route. I went with Tony Gonzalez. Tony Gonzalez had over 900 receptions, 76 touchdowns, 12 trips to the Pro Bowl. Tony Gonzalez, I know here in Denver, scored a number of touchdowns on us. But there are a number of guys we could put up here for the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm fine with Thomas. I'm fine with Gonzalez. Will Shields had some very, very big seasons as an offensive lineman. I know it's an offensive lineman, but Shields had some big numbers. Len Dawson won a Super Bowl back in the 60s or whatever it was.
Yeah, I had Len as a, you know, kind of an honorable mention. I did have Tony Gonzalez right behind Derek Thomas. Just an amazing guy. Pretty much broke all of Shannon Sharpe's records.
Yeah.
Tried to go after a Super Bowl signing with Atlanta. Didn't work out there, but just an amazing tight end.
Neil Smith. I guess I would give Neil Smith a little bit too. Neil Smith had some very, very productive years. Of course, he didn't get any Super Bowls until he came to Denver. But Neil Smith had some huge years, and I know when he was there with Thomas, those were two guys that I just dreaded going to Kansas City. And it seems like Denver always goes to Kansas City in like December. And they would just pin their ears back and just crush John Elway about 7 times a game. Yes, he would come back and eventually beat them in the fourth quarter. But for about, you know, 58 minutes, he was back there just getting torched by those two guys because Thomas and Smith were a nasty, nasty combination. Anybody else that belongs on this list of Kansas City Chiefs?
I don't know. To me, it's a little bit of a gap between the top few that we've mentioned. Priest Holmes, undrafted.
Yeah, Priest Holmes was a very, very solid player. Came out of Texas, had some very good years. Yeah, it's kind of tough. What about Larry Johnson? He had a few decent years, didn't he? But I think those guys, Gonzalez, Thomas, those are the guys that stand out to me. And then, of course, if we go back, but they didn't have the production. Maybe someone like a Mike Garrett or somebody going way back to the 60s and 70s. I don't know. I'm good with Derek Thomas being at the top of that list. Another team that has had a lot of winning seasons, a lot of success in their history, although none recently, but not as many individual players would probably be the Miami Dolphins for me. The Miami Dolphins began play back in 66. You know, they're the oldest AFC team down in the Deep South. They are 2-3 in Super Bowls, but don't forget, the Miami Dolphins still, as we are reminded of every year when they crack open the prune juice, they are the only undefeated team in NFL history to go all the way through completely without a mark on their record. The Miami Dolphins did it back in 72-73. That was under, you know, Bob Greasy in that group. But who was the guy for you for the Miami Dolphins, their best player ever?
They certainly did have a lot of Hall of Famers, some great players back in the 70s. Honestly, for me, it was a pretty clear choice. I went with Dan Marino.
Yeah, I did too, because I can't compare the numbers with the talent that was around him from a Greasy to a Marino. Marino, I mean, just phenomenal numbers that he put up. 420 touchdowns? Are you kidding me? 9 times he went to the Pro Bowl. His record was 147-93. Dan Marino did it, and he did it at such a high level. And honestly, aside from Clayton and Duper, who they weren't great players. We knew their names because he kept throwing them the ball. Outside of that, it would be tough to come up with many players he played with at all on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, O.J. McDuffie? I don't even know who his next leading receiver would be. Dan Marino was a guy that he was just a phenomenal player and a guy that was completely skipped over in that 83 draft. So many teams had chances to take him. No one did. Finally, Miami just got him and they got a steal. He was a good fit for Don Shula. He just didn't have a ton of talent around him ever.
Very similar to what we were talking about with Elway.
Yeah.
Outside of Denver, name Elway's receivers.
Right.
Before Shannon Sharpe came along.
Right. And it's the exact same thing. Like, can you name a running back that played behind Dan Marino?
Sammy Smith.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Not the later.
the shorter one?
The shorter guy. Yeah, the guy that wasn't in the Bruce Lee movie. He didn't have any talent around him, but, you know, Dan Marino just found ways to get it done without a lot of talent. Bob Greasy, I guess.
Larry Zonka,
Larry Little. They had some very, very good, again, players more on, you know, defense. The defensive side had some good players with Killer Bees and that kind of thing. But anybody else that was on your list with the Miami Dolphins?
Little more recent for defense, Jason Taylor.
Jason Taylor was very good. What about
Zach Thomas?
Zach Thomas had some very productive years in Miami. But yeah, Miami, for some of the success that they have, they didn't have the huge, you know, individual talents that you would think of. Dan Marino, probably the best in history. All right, let's get to a team that is, you know, of course, on the minds of a lot of people recently, a team that has had a lot of recent success, but this is not a team that traditionally has been about success. The New England Patriots, founded back in 1960 as an AFL team, they have gone 4-4 in Super Bowls. I think we probably are both going to name the same guy as the best player and really the most important player in their history, completely changed their franchise. Let's just go ahead and on the count of three, we'll just say him at the same time. 1, 2, 3.
Tim Tebow.
Cameraman.
Oh.
We both went a different way on that. New England Patriots. Hey, you look at his winning percentage. He has the best winning percentage in the history of the NFL. Tom Brady, 172-51 as a starter, 7 times to the Pro Bowl. 4 Super Bowls, 1 4-game suspension coming up here very, very shortly. I don't know who else it could be. It's got to be Tom Brady, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's so far between him and anybody else. Like him or not, it doesn't matter. He proves it on the field. He is just an amazing competitor.
Yeah, and a guy that, you know, he understands the game, and he still has better physical tools than I think a lot of times he gets credit for. He can still put the ball very, very accurately where he needs to. He understands defenses and what they're trying to do. I do think, here's the thing, and we can talk about this briefly. Best quarterback in history for you?
That's such a tough...
It is. It's completely subjective.
It absolutely is. You're going to get... You could get 3 or 4 legitimate answers for that, and he's going to be one of those.
Yeah, yeah. He's in the conversation. Here's my problem with putting him in as the best quarterback ever. And this... I don't know that I can slight him for it, but I think the system that he plays in is... If you plug Dan Marino in with Bill Belichick, I think Dan Marino probably wins a few Super Bowls.
Oh, absolutely.
Here's the problem. I saw Matt Cassel win 10 games under Bill Belichick. That's what kind of ruined things for me.
Bill Belichick made Matt Cassel millions of dollars.
Yes. And we've seen since then, Matt Cassel isn't sort of good. Matt Castle isn't kind of good. Matt Castle is a horrible quarterback, and he won 10 games in New England. That's when I started to go, wait a second. This might be a little bit of a system thing. I'm not slamming the door on Brady and saying he's not the best player. I'm saying, don't forget, we are one...
It's open for debate.
It is. We are one ill-fated coaching decision from him and Belichick kind of being talking about as being chokers in Super Bowls. If not for one stupid play call by Pete Carroll, we might be talking about the New England Patriots. Yeah, I don't know. They just can't quite get it done in the big game.
Well, and how closely was that Raiders game in the AFC Championship game? The Super Bowls that they've won have all come down to the last minute, that last-minute drive. And again, you got to give him credit for it, though.
He finds ways to come through.
Absolutely did that. So yep. A lot of credit to him. One of the best ever.
Yeah, one of the best ever. We'll leave it at that. One of the best ever. All right, anybody else make your list for the New England Patriots?
You know, it was a wide gap. Stanley Morgan.
I've got John Hanna. John Hanna had some productive years. I'll give you a guy, and you'll remember this guy. Up until Tom Brady, he might have been thought of as one of the best players in New England Patriots history. Andre Tippett. Andre Tippett had some phenomenal years as linebacker up in New England. I remember seeing them back in the 80s. Andre Tippett had some very good years. I don't know, Sam Bam Cunningham, somebody like that.
Richard Seymour.
Yeah.
It's
a huge gap.
Yeah.
It's Tom Brady and everyone else. Here's a fun game to play with your Patriot friends, though. Name any quarterback before Tom Brady. Like, everybody's a winner because they just go, we had a team before Tom Brady?
If he could stay healthy, Gronkowski's going to nudge up there on the list.
Yeah. No, he's got a chance to.
We'll never pass Brady, but he's going to raise up the list there.
Yeah. No, he's extremely talented, pretty amazing athlete, complete nutcase. And every single offseason, I would be worried to death that he's never going to come back. But no, Gronkowski, phenomenal, phenomenal player. We saw that firsthand last year in Denver, too. Moving on, the New York Jets. You know, the New York Jets were founded back in 1959, but they wanted to be called the Titans of New York. Not the New York Titans. They wanted to be called the Titans of New York. They were an AFL team, but they won one of the most important games in NFL history when they won Super Bowl III. It was the AFL versus the NFL, and somehow the New York Jets beat the Baltimore Colts in Super Bowl III. Yes, they haven't been to a Super Bowl since. They don't look like they're going to be to a Super Bowl anytime soon. I'm going to be honest. I really struggled with the New York Jets. I had a hard time coming up with great players for the New York Jets. Who is your best player in New York Jets history?
A lot of times you got to default to a quarterback.
Yeah.
Tim Tebow.
100% agree. He's made our list a lot today. Tim Tebow has made a lot of our best players.
Unfortunately, I think we're out of teams he's been on, but you'd mentioned one of the most important games in NFL history.
Yeah.
The director of that victory is my number one Jet of all time, Joe Namath.
Yeah, and I think it's got to be Joe.
He might have been drunk for that game.
He probably was drunk for that game. Really didn't. If you go back and watch that game, and I've seen that game, the Jets win 16-7. They won it mostly on a pretty salty defense. They won it a lot because Johnny Unitas wasn't playing for the Colts, and they won it because of a running game. They didn't really win it that much because of Joe Namath. Here's an interesting stat for Joe Namath, because Joe Namath, I swear I'm not hating on Joe Namath. I just think he might have been a touch overrated. Five times he went to the Pro Bowl. His record as a starter, 62-63. Had four ties. I mean, he wasn't even a 500 quarterback. It's kind of bizarre. He had 173 touchdowns. He had 220 interceptions. I realize the game was different then. I realize it was a different era. Yes, Joe Namath is the best player in New York Jets history, probably because there's really no one else. And he did win the most important game in Jets history. A couple guys I'll throw out there. Don Maynard had some very, very big seasons with him. Here's a guy who maybe even should have made our list with the Patriots a little bit. Curtis Martin is a really underrated player.
Absolutely. People don't realize how high he is up on the all-time rushing list.
He just put up quiet yards. He wasn't a real flashy guy. He just steadily put out solid seasons year in, year out. He did it with the Jets. He did it with the Patriots. Curtis Martin had a very, very good career. And I'll give a couple guys. Mark Gastineau had one of the best single seasons as a pass rusher, broke the single season record for sacks. Joe Klecko had some very, very good years with the Jets. Anybody else that would maybe at least be a consideration for your Jets team?
Honestly, I was going for Gastineau there, so yeah. I think you've kind of wiped the slate clean.
I'm going to throw out Al Toon.
Sure.
He had some solid years. Wesley Walker. I think Wesley Walker was legally blind. Played wide receiver, and I think he was legally blind. I think that's true. Maybe I'm making that up, but I think you could check he was legally blind. Like, we think of this historical New York Jets, they haven't had much to talk about. Like, they don't have a whole lot. All right, we're going to move to a team that does have a whole lot, and a team that I really, really struggled picking the best player in their history. Of course, the Oakland Raiders, an old AFL team. You know, they were formed back in 1960. They won the 67 AFL Championship. But the Oakland Raiders are a team. They had a ton of good players. They had a ton, but I don't know if they had great players. The Oakland Raiders have had a lot of very, very good players. I don't know if they've had a ton of great players. I struggled a little bit coming up with the guy that I would put on the top of the list. Who did you come up with for Denver Broncos rival, the Oakland Raiders?
You know, it's kind of funny. I felt the same way. I didn't have a clear-cut guy, but I had a handful of guys that are really, really good Hall of Famers.
Yep.
I eventually landed on Marcus Allen.
Yeah, and I could totally see Marcus Allen being on that list. Of course, he was a guy that contributed so much to that Super Bowl win. We all remember the play where he reverses his field against Washington, cuts it all the way back. I think it was 73 yards. I think at least maybe it still is at the time. I think he had set the record for the longest run in the Super Bowl. I actually went with Tim Brown. Tim Brown had over 1,000 receptions. He had 99 touchdowns. He went to the Pro Bowl 9 times. And I don't know if we can name too many quarterbacks that threw him the ball. Like, he played with some really bad quarterbacks.
Imagine, we did try to get him.
Right. We almost had him here in Denver. He was supposed to come to Denver, and that all kind of fell through.
Made him an offer. The last minute, the Raiders matched it.
Yes, and made him a pretty sizable offer. I think Al Davis is still angry that we raised the money on that. Broncos and the Raiders have a good old-fashioned rivalry. I'm kind of rooting for them to get better so we can get back to those rivalry days, and it seems like they're on the right track. Tim Brown, Marcus Allen, a couple of very, very good players. Howie Long can be on the list. Jim Otto was a guy that did for years as center. The double zero, Jim Otto produced every single year, and it, based off of what his peers said about him, one of the best players. You know, they had a really, really good half of that offensive line with Art Shell and Gene Upshaw just anchoring that one side of the line. But a guy for the Oakland Raiders he never gets the credit that I think he deserves. Nobody ever talks about Ken Stabler. If I've got 2 minutes left in the game, give me Ken Stabler. I'm probably going to win the game. He just was so, so dangerous.
Yeah, it's funny. I had him on my list too. I had it down to three or four guys. He was definitely on there. His best quarterback they've ever had.
Yeah, Stabler was phenomenal. He just always found a way. I mean, guys like Fred Biletnikoff, Dave Casper, it seemed like they just had, Ted Hendricks, Jack Tatum. They had so many guys. Lester Hayes. They just had so much talent. Had Lyle Alzado for a few productive steroid-filled years. Oakland Raiders had just so many players.
Just a nasty disposition, and it attracted that type of player for a long time.
Yeah, and they seemed to always get those kind of players, and it seemed like they had a lot of retreads where maybe they struggled with other teams, maybe they struggled kind of with the corporate ways of other teams. They'd go to Oakland and find a perfect spot. Al Davis loved those guys. Marcus Allen, Tim Brown, I don't know. Who do you all think? I think it could be a few different guys. The Oakland Raiders had a ton of very, very talented players come through their franchise. Another team that I really, really struggled with, this might have been one of the toughest ones I had to pick, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh Steelers are an old franchise. They are, in fact, the oldest AFC franchise. Go back to 1933, and they have done it in Super Bowls. They are 6-2 in Super Bowls. Pittsburgh Steelers, we think of so many different things when it comes to Steelers, but the biggest thing we think of is success. They always seem to find ways to win. Who is the guy that stands out for you for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I think this team gave me the most struggle.
Yeah, I think it did me too. I had a hard time.
There are just, and I could literally go between three or four different guys.
Yep.
I actually landed on Joe Green.
I actually landed on Joe Green also. So I guess we agree on that. And here's was the, I guess the thing that sealed it for me with Joe Green. This team, the Steelers didn't, is, you know, they finally started to get some offense with Terry Bradshaw, with Lynn Swann, with John Stallworth, you know, Rocky Blyer, Franco Harris, those guys. But let's be real clear. The Steelers won because of that nasty, tenacious defense. Who was the best player on that nasty, tenacious defense? It was Mean Joe Green, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the guy that I actually have second might be the best, the second best guy, and that was probably Jack Lambert.
That's exactly who I had second. And it's a common theme. It's nasty defense.
No, they were just so, they just completely smothered everything you want to do. They ran that 3-4, and their linebackers were so good. You know, Jack Lambert, Jack Ham. They just had some very, very good linebackers that could run the field. But the push all started up front, and that's where they got most of their success. There's a few other guys I guess we could throw on the list. Joe Green was it for me, but who else made your list?
Well, you briefly touched on Swann, Franco Harris, guys like that. Let me ask you a question here.
All right.
Quarterbacks.
Yep.
Roethlisberger or Bradshaw?
Probably Roethlisberger.
Honestly, I think it's hands down. You kind of mentioned being overrated. I think Bradshaw was definitely a benefactor of that whole team.
Well, sure he was, because I always look at, you know, when Tom Brady won that Super Bowl, and that, what was that? He's been to six and he's won four?
I think it's four.
Yeah. Everyone was like, well, that seals it. He's definitely the best quarterback ever. And I'm like, well, wait a second. Bradshaw won four, didn't lose any, and nobody talks about him. You know what? Because he's a product of the rest of the team. And so I always struggled with that, because Bradshaw won a ton of Super Bowls, won every single one he ever went to. But, man, he had a ton of talent around him. Swann, Stallworth, Randy Grossman, Rocky Blyer. I mean, they were loaded, and that was just on the offense, which wasn't as good. The defense was where, I mean, Mel Blount, you had just phenomenal players over on the defensive side. And don't forget, that center, Mike Webster, you know, a big portion of the concussion movie and that whole scene, but Mike Webster was really, really good on the offensive line. Anybody else that makes our Pittsburgh Steelers list?
Somebody a little more recent, Polamalu?
Yeah, Troy Polamalu should probably be on the list. You mentioned Ben Roethlisberger, and he should at least be in the conversation. What about Hines Ward? Hines Ward put up some very, very solid numbers and always consistent.
Unbelievable numbers. It's, you know, it's funny with the Steelers last almost decade. Look at the receivers they've come up with.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they've had some amazing...
We're benefiting from one of them right here.
Sure. No, absolutely. Getting Emmanuel Sanders, and Emmanuel Sanders was a cast-off that they were like, eh, he's hurt too much, and we don't really know if he's consistent enough, and he's come here and been nothing but phenomenal in Denver.
And they've got the best receiver in the business right now.
Yes, they do. No, the receivers up in Pittsburgh, they kind of have a knack, and it seems like they have a knack for just drafting well, developing those players. So many players started their careers in Pittsburgh, whether they finished them there or not. Sometimes they went on to other things, but a lot of really, really good players. Moving forward, we've got two teams left, and I'm going to be honest, both these teams are a little bit of a struggle. First team up, the San Diego Chargers began back in 60 as an AFL team. They actually won an AFL championship in 1963. They did make it to a Super Bowl. I believe that was the 94 season. They lost in a big, big way to the San Francisco 49ers. San Diego Chargers, not a ton to talk about, but they have had some talented players come through there. Who is the top player in San Diego Chargers history?
I had it down to three guys.
Okay.
I had a hard time determining one of the three. I honestly ended up going with LaDainian Tomlinson.
Well, and I don't think you can go wrong with LaDainian Tomlinson. You know, he came in. He was kind of funny because he was down at TCU, and so many people looked at him when he came out of college and were like, well, he's too little. I don't know if he can really play. Dude, I've seen this guy play. He can flat out play. There's no question. LaDainian Tomlinson, good for a long time. I actually went with Junior Seau. Seau, 47 sacks, 12 trips to the Pro Bowl. For years, he kind of anchored that defense, gave them heart and soul. Junior Seau, very, very good player. But there's a few other guys that we could at least talk about. Where do you rank Dan Fouts in that?
I had him third. Yeah. I had Junior Seau second. Hated playing against him.
Yep.
Absolutely hated playing against him. Lance Allworth.
That's Allworth, very good. John Hadle, very good.
Kellen Winslow.
Yeah, Kellen Winslow. And, you know, that whole group, speaking of missed opportunities, that group in 81,
ugh.
Fouts, Joyner, Wes Chandler, Kellen Winslow, Chuck Muncy. I mean, I think they had James Brooks maybe still at that time. That San Diego group, that offense was absolutely phenomenal, and they ran into one of the things that they just couldn't get past, like 40 below temperatures in Cincinnati, and ended up not being able to beat the Bengals that day. Although, to be fair, Cincinnati, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, Cincinnati had gone to San Diego and blown them out earlier that year. So maybe it just wasn't a good matchup with Cincinnati. But that team offensively was just loaded. That still, the 81 AFC playoff game against the Miami Dolphins still might be the greatest game that I've ever witnessed.
It was unbelievable. San Diego, that team, they said, we're going to throw the ball. Just try to stop us.
Oh, and they just fired it all over the place. Dan Fouts, it seemed like he got knocked down on every play. He's hurt. He's like got blood coming out of his mouth. He's got the big beard. He looks like he's going to get sick. He stays down on one knee, and then he gets up on the next play, and you're like, oh, no, he's staying down. He gets up and throws a touchdown. You're just like, I thought he was hurt.
Oh, he looked like he was hacking up a lung half the time.
It's just amazing. No, Dan Fouts is another guy that I think put him with a defense, because for as good as that offense was, like, name one player that played on that defense. Louis Kelcher? It would be tough to come up with it. I mean, they just didn't have any defense. They could just put up huge, huge numbers. San Diego Chargers, LaDainian Tomlinson, I like that pick. Junior Seau, I think, is right there. Some really, really good players. But we are now down to our final team. We are going to wrap up our best players in franchise history for every team in the NFL. We are at the Tennessee Titans. Of course, they began back in 1960 as the Houston Oilers. Didn't have a ton of success, had two AFL championships, have never appeared in a Super Bowl. Certainly don't look like they're going to anytime soon. But going back to when they were the Houston Oilers, the Tennessee Titans had a little bit of a history there, I guess. Who ranks out top for the Tennessee Titans on your list?
Well, you'd mentioned the history starting with the Houston Oilers, and I had to go back there to get my top players.
Well, of course. There's not much to talk about with the Tennessee Titans.
Honestly, and it's a coin flip for the top two for me. I really struggled having a definite number one.
Okay.
I gave a slight lean to Earl Campbell.
Earl Campbell had about a 7 or 8 year window when you did not want to play Earl Campbell. I mean, so big, so strong, so powerful, and had speed that just didn't make any sense. The Tyler Rose was something special. And yeah, I could totally see Earl Campbell being that guy. I actually have Bruce Matthews at the top of my list. Went to 14 Pro Bowls. Always just steady, steady, steady on that side of the offensive line. Bruce Matthews had some very, very good years. Who else made your list for the Tennessee Titans?
Warren Moon was my 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call it there. I obviously had Bruce Matthews. Incredible. Again, when you're talking about the offensive line, they don't get the accolades. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe deserves to be a little bit higher. Recently, Eddie George, maybe. I don't know. It's just so hard to pick somebody from the current Titans team.
I'm going to give you Steve McNair.
Franchise.
I'm going to throw Steve McNair out there. Only because he led the Titans somehow to the Super Bowl. And to do that, I don't think we can underrate that. The Tennessee Titans don't look like they should belong even on an NFL field half the time. He somehow got them to the Super Bowl. I know he wasn't always pretty. Big, strong guy, found ways to win. Steve McNair was a tough guy. Warren Moon, that group that he had down there.
The Smurfs.
That was a group that really, really, I mean, you want to talk about putting up offense. They just couldn't find ways to close out games. Who was that receiving core? Drew Hill, Curtis Duncan, Hill, Haywood Jeffries.
Ernest Givens.
I think they had sometimes Mike Rozier in the backfield at times. That was a fun group, though. And when they were playing well, and especially in the first half, it seemed like the Houston Oilers offense just, I mean, they could put up points. You know, you think back to what they did against Denver. They took a 21-6 lead. You think back to what they did, of course, against Buffalo. What was that, 31-0? Was that 31-0?
It might have been, because it was, I think it was 24-0 at halftime, and the opening kickoff goes back. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think so.
And then at that point, you're like, oh, wow, this is the crowd's leaving. Over. That team had two of the biggest heartbreak losses. Obviously, the comeback brutal. Against or the Buffalo comeback, but the one here in Denver was almost as bad.
Yeah.
They had Denver back almost in the same situation inside the 10, but no timeouts this time. Elway completes two fourth downs, including a fourth and 10 or 15, I believe, where he rolls out. The cornerback comes up to cover Elway, leaves Vance Johnson wide open, dumps it down into there. Warren Moon.
Just the victim of it. Didn't have enough defense around him, and it seemed like if they had to run the ball, they couldn't run the ball when it was late and you needed to eat some clock. They just couldn't finish games out, and so as a result, they were just victims of these horrible comebacks, because in the first half, they're out there throwing the ball all over the place. They're putting up these huge points, just incredible to watch, and then it would all go downhill.
Has anybody thrown a prettier spiral?
No. I don't know if they have. Prettiest spirals I've ever seen. Warren Moon and probably Randall Cunningham. Just gorgeous passes. I mean, when they came out of their hand, it just looked so pretty. And maybe it's because we're in Denver and John Elway didn't always throw tight spirals. And Peyton Manning, the next tight spiral he throws will be the first.
Yeah.
So we haven't exactly seen that here in Denver. But no, Warren Moon threw a pretty, pretty pass. Underrated player.
Well, keep in mind, too, he went up to the CFL and lit it up there, too.
Yeah, had some huge years up there because he wanted to play quarterback, and the NFL really wasn't looking at that, having an African-American quarterback at that time. And so he went up there, tore it up, and then they finally, I guess you could come down here and play. And he came down here and torched everybody down here, too. He had productive seasons everywhere he went. Minnesota, Houston, of course, was the big one. He had some good years at Kansas City, Seattle. I think he had a year or two that was pretty solid. Warren Moon had some phenomenal years. He's definitely got to be on our list. You know, I think that's it. I think we've gone through and we've wrapped up every team in the NFL. We agreed on the most part. We might have had a few slight disagreements. I would love to hear from any listeners. If you've got a nomination or a team that you say, yay, you guys missed the boat on this, we would love to hear from you. Feel free to drop us a line at dailydosports@gmail.com. We'd love to hear back. But Mike, I have to say thank you for coming into the Daily Dose studio, sitting down, talking for a few hours about the NFL. Always fun and always a good time to do this.
Loved it. This was a lot of fun. Looking forward to the next one.
There you have it. We finish up our greatest players for each NFL franchise. We finished up, of course, the AFC. We did the NFC a few weeks ago. Did we get it right? Did we get the player right? Did you have any disagreements? Did you have a few players that you might have missed this one? Maybe you guys forgot about this guy. We would love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at dailydosesports@gmail.com. Of course, you can also find us on Facebook or on Twitter as well. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. That is DALY Daily Dose Sports. Feel free to head over to the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. Like I've told you, you may find a few podcasts over there that you like. You can also drop us a line over on the forum page. We would love to hear from you. Have to say thanks to Mike from Castle Rock for coming in, doing such a great job, counting down the best players from each and every team. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. You know, next week on the show, we are back to just some new content. There are a number of things coming out in the world of sports. College football is coming quickly. The NFL preseason is like right upon us. We've got a number of things. Baseball playoff races are starting to shape up. And of course, we do have the Summer Olympics that will just continue to get better. I will see you all next week. Have a great week, everybody.